Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
It's important we look at the facts.
Why? Why?
Douglas Ross is sounding pretty scared.
Because I believe in independence.
And he clapped like a seal.
Hello and welcome to another Planet Holyrood. I'm Paul Hutchin, political editor of the Daily Record. Joining me this week to chew over the drama in Scottish politics are regular guests, John Ferguson, who's the political editor of the Sunday Mail, and Douglas Dickey of the Scottish Daily Express. So, it's a story that they can't shut down, and frankly, it's their own fault. I think the last few weeks, the Scottish Government has been on the rack, a rack of its own making, over the WhatsApp COVID inquiry scandal. So just to give you a very brief summary, it was revealed recently by a KC to the UK COVID inquiry that the Scottish Government hadn't handed over any WhatsApp messages relating to the pandemic. It was then revealed that Jason Leach had been deleting his messages. Our guest, John Ferguson, then revealed that this was also true of Nicola Sturgeon. So the latest bit of drama, if you want to call it that, is a statement from the Deputy First Minister, Shona Robison, to Parliament yesterday, in which she made quite an important correction. She had said, or I think it was maybe the First Minister who had said, that they'd originally been asked for WhatsApp messages by the inquiry in September, but now they're saying it was actually February. Bit of a difference. Starting with you, John, I mean, it's just another self-inflicted wound from the government here, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I can't believe that there's anything actually in these WhatsApps that's as going to do as much damage as the damage that the perceived cover-up in releasing them is doing to the government. Surely the best strategy would just have been to put your hands up, say, we've not produced these things yet, we're going to do so now. Instead, the government have gone for a tactic of saying we will release all these messages, but then they've tried to obfuscate the clear backlog of failing to produce them to the inquiry that's obviously been happening for the last year or so. One of the very interesting things in this, obviously there's a issue that's been picked up today about whether the First Minister's misled Parliament. There's also a very interesting issue with the First Minister's own WhatsApps, and that he has said that he will produce them unredacted. He's fallen back in this line several times, but there's still really big question marks over what he's told the COVID inquiry previously about his WhatsApps.
I was going to ask you about that, Joe. Just walk us through this element of it, because I think you reported, did you not, a couple of weeks ago, it was the Sunday Mail splash, that Hamza Yousaf was among the senior figures who either deleted WhatsApps or there were missing messages. And then he denied that. So just talk us through all of that.
So the thrust of our story was that Nicola Sturgeon's WhatsApps, that certainly she told the COVID inquiry that he's been deleted. We also included in that story the information that Hamza Yousaf had told the COVID inquiry that his WhatsApps hadn't been retained. Now, this information is contained in a table which hasn't been released, I might add, by the COVID inquiry yet, but there is a table in existence that has a list of ministers. Strongly believe, first, it would be incredible if the First Minister and previous First Minister weren't on that table. John Swinney's also on that table. Our strong understanding is that the information next to Hamza Yousaf's name is that the information hasn't, his WhatsApps haven't been retained. Now, he obviously, John Swinney and Nicola Sturgeon have refused many times to clear up whether their WhatsApps have been deleted. Hamza Yousaf took a different tact. He didn't say anything about our story, didn't complain about the story, but when he finally appeared in Parliament and was asked about this, when he was asked about it in a television interview, he has said that he, and I quote, doesn't know where that media report came from. He didn't deny the media report, but he said he doesn't know where that came from, and he's retained his WhatsApps, and he will provide them unredacted. Now, the next day, it kind of slipped out in a statement from the government that this appeared to be the result of the First Minister finding an old phone which contained these WhatsApps. That's the reason that he can now give them. So what Hamza hasn't cleared up is, when did he find this phone and what did he previously tell the COVID inquiry about his WhatsApps? Now, if it's the case that he previously told the COVID inquiry that his WhatsApps hadn't been retained, and that the discovery of this old phone was an extremely recent discovery, i.e. after the furore around the failure to produce these WhatsApps broke, then it does feel like the First Minister has perhaps misled the media as well as Parliament.
So, John, do you suspect that the time your story was published, it was accurate that the WhatsApps have not been retained? And then after that, he's found a phone in the house and then maybe coughed up the WhatsApps to the inquiry.
I think that he has told the inquiry previously that his WhatsApps haven't been retained. And, you know, this is pretty much public record. The KC for the inquiry has said we have a list of 70 names in the Scottish Government. We've asked them, and now it's quite clear this table doesn't give the WhatsApps. This was just after months of wrangling over the production of the WhatsApps. They've said, look, here's a list of names. Just tell, you don't need to produce the WhatsApps. Just tell us if there are WhatsApps in existence and if there was and what's happened to them. Now, my strong understanding is that the First Minister has said his WhatsApps weren't retained. He now seems to be saying actually he has them because he's discovered a new phone, an old phone. So I've asked the Scottish Government Press Office several times just to clear up this timeline. They've failed completely to do so. He's been asked in a television interview to clear up the timeline on when this phone was discovered. He said that he won't be giving a running commentary on that. Now, I think this is important stuff because it has to do with people's trust in the media. And, you know, it's not unreasonable. We're not even asking what's in these WhatsApps at the moment, but I think it's reasonable that Hamza just explains what he previously told the inquiry and just when he discovered that in actual fact he could produce these WhatsApps that he's been very proud of declaring that he's going to provide now unredacted.
Dougie, just to bring you in, and clearly the statement yesterday from the Deputy First Minister, that relates to the Yousaf administration, as do any statements made when Hamza is FM. But ultimately, this is about the Sturgeon administration, what they said during the pandemic and what they're providing to the inquiry. I mean, to what extent do you think Hamza's problems are down to his instinctive loyalty to his predecessor, and the fact that he's just not willing to, you know, for instance, say publicly, Nicola, you know, answer the questions on your WhatsApps, just say if they're deleted or not.
Yeah, I mean, right away, I think I think everything here, you know, harks back to, in some ways, Sturgeon's almost dictatorial style of leadership. She was obviously the number one person. Her fingerprints were in everything. And so it's only natural that people think her fingerprints are all over this. And she is the one that ultimately is causing him the headache. And I think he has been painfully loyal to her when it's obvious that, you know, the hangover from her time in office is causing him problems. I thought when he came out and claimed that he did have his WhatsApp, that he'd found this phone, I'm half expecting in 2 days' time for him to reveal that his dog's now eating it and he can't provide them now. But I actually thought maybe this was him trying to move away from that. But he just keeps digging a bigger hole for himself. And I think ultimately the whole thing comes down to, you know, a real culture cover-up within the SNP. This idea that they, whenever they're questioned on things like this, they just kind of throw their hands up and act completely shocked and as if we've got the cheek to, you know, question them on this. I think they treat the media and I think they treat Parliament with a real degree of contempt when it comes to things like this. This isn't the first time Humza Yousaf this week's been pulled up on making potentially misleading statements in Parliament. It just erodes trust in the government. It's just a complete nightmare for him, but it's very much, as you said at the start, it's one of his own making. And I think ultimately it does, you know, does hark back to Nicola Sturgeon's time in office, and he seems very, very reluctant to cut himself away from that. I don't know if he thinks Sturgeon's still a vote winner with some people, and that, you know, by turning on her, of course, he was seen as Sturgeon's, you know, the continuity candidate. Does he think if he does turn out to Sturgeon and say, look, you're going to need to fess up on this, is he worried about, you know, guilt by association? But it's just a complete mess. But I think you've seen at Holyrood today at FMQs when he was questioned on it, he was very animated, very angry about it, very irritated. And I think the message was clear. The message for Humza Yousaf is, how dare you question us on this? And I think that's a really rotten attitude for a politician to take.
And Dougie, it's difficult to see how they can shut this down. I mean, there's so many twists and turns and different angles to this story. You know, you've got the sort of the procedural stuff about when did they tell the inquiry, about all the different aspects. And then you've got the issue about deletions. And of course, I think the Scottish Government has brought in IT experts to try and get to the bottom of that. And then, of course, once the WhatsApps are published, there will inevitably be some sort of embarrassing material. And then you've got people giving evidence like Humza and Nicola and Jason Leach to the inquiry. So I mean, this is just going to go on and on and on for months. And then we're into the general election. And people will remember.
I mean, if there's one thing the SNP have been good at, and if there's one thing they like, is to be in complete control of a story. And this is a story that's just completely out of their control. And like you say, it's not going to stop. No matter what comes out in these messages now, and as John said, you know, it might not be as bad as some of the ones that we've seen at the UK inquiry, from UK government ministers, but there's always going to be a question mark over it now. And that's because they've turned it into something it should never have been. They should just have handed them over. They should just have fessed up. But now, because, you know, this has been ongoing effectively 9 months now, because they were asked about it in February, you know, there's always going to be a cloud hanging over this. You know, what are they hiding? What message was sent over? They've made a big deal of this 14,000 messages. I mean, Matt Hancock handed over 100,000 himself. You know, so 14,000 might sound like a big number, but it's not, you know, in terms of this. And they've just lost control of the narrative. It's something, you know, Alex Salmond was good at taking control of the narrative. Nicola Sturgeon was good at taking control of the narrative. But Humza Yousaf is hopeless at it. And it's shown. And I think, you know, this is going to be a massive, massive black mark as we head into the the general election.
No doubt, we'll just see you this time next week for the latest instalment in this dismal Netflix blockbuster. So moving
maybe
on,
we'll find on old phones. Maybe they've all got old phones on the side of their, you know, couch, and they might indeed turn up.
Are they burner phones?
Well, let's not get into that. That's a different story, John. I do love that phrase, burner phone. It's so sleazy. King's Speech, John, as we know, the number one issue facing families across the UK is the cost of living crisis. Did the Tories put that front and centre of the King's Speech, or was it just the usual niche Tory bollocks?
I mean, there was a couple of things in there, wasn't there? But that really, it's difficult to see what the Conservatives have to offer, really, to your average man or woman on the street. They seem so preoccupied with sowing division in every way possible, rather than actually delivering things that are going to make life better for people. So, I mean, yeah, perhaps there was a few things in there that you could point to as potentially being helpful to people, but you get the feeling that they're just going to be subsumed by inflation and rising interest rates and all of the other terrible things that are higher fuel prices, all the terrible things that are coming down the line. It does feel like the Conservatives are just out of ideas, really, and that you're kind of waiting for someone new to come in next year.
Dougie, do you get the impression there's a sort of split in the government? You've got people like Sunak and certainly the Chancellor Jeremy Hunt wanting to focus on the cost of living, yet their message has been drowned out by people like Suella Braverman, who's, you know, making offensive claims like homelessness as a lifestyle choice. Do you think there's a tension there that is unresolved?
I don't know I think there probably is. I mean, we've seen Rishi Sunak today. His spokesman distanced himself from Suella Braverman's comments about the Met Police, although he still, you know, he says he still has confidence in her. And I think that's, you know, for any political party that is a relatively broad church, you know, you're always going to have that tension between two rival factions in it. I think Rishi Sunak's a bright guy. A lot of the King's Speech felt like it was stuff that was kind of important to him, you know, the stamping out smoking and kind of things like that. It was stuff that was personal to him. And I think guys like him and Jeremy Hunt probably do want to focus on the day-to-day issues. You know, I think they would love to come up with a way to solve the cost of living crisis less than a year before a general election. Doubtful that anyone was going to come up for that with that in that time. But yeah, and then you've got, obviously, Suella Braverman, amongst others, some of them no longer in government, you know, Jacob Rees-Mogg, guys like that, who seem to want to play these kind of culture wars. And I think the problem there is that when people like Suella Braverman might have a point on certain things, it kind of gets drowned out by what they've said before. And when Rishi Sunak then goes into these kind of arguments, then what Suella Braverman has said before drowns out what he's saying, even if he's made a good point. I think all in all, you know, the Tories increasingly look like a party who know that they're primed for opposition, for a period in opposition. And I think they're trying to shore up their core vote to make sure that what happens next year at the general election isn't as bad as maybe the polls are suggesting they will be. Overall, I thought the King's Speech was pretty uninspiring.
I was going to say that. Even for someone, like, say you've got a Conservative supporter watching the King's Speech, Doug, it just didn't feel like a sort of springboard.
No.
To closing the polling gap. I just didn't see things in there that are really going to inspire people and change the political weather. It felt like an end of days sort of rushed, panicked King speech that's just going to be ignored by people.
I don't think they were helped by the fact that Charles looked like he was reading a ransom note at times during that. He didn't look enthused at all. You know, you could almost see him grimace when he was talking about North Sea oil. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, there was very little new in it. There was some good things in it, I thought. Stuff that maybe Holyrood should look at. Obviously, you know, Scottish Express readers would maybe want to see the Scottish government fall on in terms of the sentencing bill, you know, given the SNP's sentencing guide, well, the guidelines by the Independent Sentencing Council, which was set up by the SNP, is obviously is, you know, for under 25s and in terms of softer sentences. I think people would maybe look at that as a good thing. I think another interesting one in a personal point of view was the Football Governance Bill for England. Is that something we should maybe look at here? You know, the Holocaust Memorial Bill, really important right now at a time when, you know, British Jews feel under threat, they feel under attack. So there was some good stuff in it, but it was pretty uninspiring all in all. I don't think you can, you know, dress it up any other way. It was very much, it wasn't something I think to get, you know, our readers excited at all.
Complete change of subject, John. This week you and I were at the launch of Labour MSP Monica Lennon's Members' Bill to criminalise ecocide. I think this would apply to really damaging environmental breaches that help trash the planet, things like oil spills and unsustainable fishing practices, that sort of thing. And she's proposing in her members' bill prison sentences of between 10 and 20 years. What do you make of the proposal, and what do you think the chances are of it passing in some form?
I think that there's a high likelihood that the bill will pass in some form, just because it sounds to me like something that will probably have quite a lot of support from potentially have support of the SNP and obviously the Greens and a lot of Labour MSPs. It does strike me as a bill where the devil really will be in the detail in terms of just how far is this going to go and how likely is it that you would ever see prosecutions? You know, how scary will this really be for people running companies or whatever that might be doing environmentally damaging things? But, I mean, in principle, it does seem like a good idea. I think the fundamentally what it's about is a recognition of the fact that at the moment there are legal protections for the environment, but that they're not adhered to because big companies will generally weigh things up in a spreadsheet, and they'll think, well, to stop doing this will cost us X amount to keep on, in terms of a fine or something like that, to keep on doing it will make even more money. So let's just keep on doing it. And if we happen to be fined by the CEPA or the Environmental Protection Agency or whatever, then so be it. The idea here is that when companies are making those decisions, they're going to need to be a lot more careful because the downside could be a number of years, potentially 20 years in jail for the head of the business. Now that on the face of it does sound like something that would be an incentive not to damage the environment. I think where this is going to get really interesting, and it's at this stage, it will be the amendments to this bill that will kind of decide whether it's going to go through or not. Will be when you get to the nitty gritty of looking at, would this potentially mean, for example, that new oil licenses might not be granted or might not be able to be put into action because the heads of oil companies will feel that they're potentially going to be in breach of criminal law and at risk of a jail sentence. Those kind of really nitty gritty issues that are likely to put off quite a lot of MSPs. But if it's something that just broadly, I mean, the idea is that this is something that would be used in practice very few times, but that it will act as a kind of a deterrent to things that are very damaging. I think one company, an obvious thing would be Scottish Water, for example. There's been loads of issues of sewage overflows and polluting of beaches and rivers that Scottish Water are fined on a pretty regular basis for this sort of activity. Would they change the way they operated if they felt that the downside was going to be a jail sentence rather than a fine?
Mm. And Doug, I'm trying to imagine if I was a government advisor or a government minister just now. Clearly, it's a proposal by a Labour MSP, but clearly they will agree with the principle of criminalising ecocide. It doesn't cost them any money. It will have symbolic importance in terms of Scotland being forced in the UK to go down this route. You could probably see the attractions for Humza Yousaf in supporting it.
Yeah, absolutely can see the attraction, and apart from anything else, I think your average voter in the street is going to be pleased that action appears to be getting taken ahead of actual politics. I think there's a feeling that under this government, especially the Greens in government, that ordinary people are kind of bearing the brunt of their environmental policies. I mean, we're on a Slater this week, talking about the recycling bins, and there's a potential for being fined if you put things in the wrong bin. You've got Patrick Harvey saying, oh, you need to spend thousands of pounds putting heat pumps in your home. I think people will be glad to see companies who actually damage the planet rather than someone that puts a can iron brew in the paper bin by accident are the ones being, targeted. I think for too long it's ordinary punters who've bore the brunt that of those kind of environmental policies. So, I like John, I think it will go ahead in some form, and I think we'll probably go ahead with support from almost every party probably in Holyrood.
Yeah. John, my favourite story of the week: Health Secretary Michael Matheson emerged that in relation to a parliamentary device, I think it was an iPad, managed to rack up an 11 grand. Data roaming bill when he was on a family holiday in Morocco, and he's going to pay back $3,000, I think, through parliamentary expenses. What's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look like Michael Matheson personally will be paying back anything for this huge bill, that taxpayers will be one way or the other picking it up in full. He's gone on holiday to Morocco. He's had his iPad with him for some reason, depending on what tariff he's been on. He's ended up running up a huge bill because he's been outside of the normal free data roaming area. I'm not sure at what point he's discovered what's happened, but he's insisted that this wasn't really his fault. It was all parliamentary business that he was doing on the iPad, and that the taxpayers rather than him should pick up the bill. Does sound like he's been incredibly stupid to have allowed this to happen. I wonder whether it would have happened if it had been his own phone that he'd been using, or whether he would have been much more careful to make sure that he wasn't going to incur huge roaming fees. And also there's obviously a big question mark over exactly what was going on this iPad. He's either the hardest working minister in Scotland, having been, spending 24 hours a day on government business while on holiday over Christmas, or I don't know, perhaps someone else was using his iPad and this wasn't actually government business.
Yeah, Dougie, it all seems rather odd. I mean, there was a huddle with Matheson after PMQs, a media huddle, and he answered one question before walking away very briskly into the ministerial tower, almost like he didn't want to discuss it at length.
Well,
was he watching? Was it Match of the Day on loop?
Well, I heard Jackie Bailey this morning saying that he must have been watching Netflix, so...
No. I'll give you the exact quote. She said Netflix or something.
Or something. Yeah. So or Netflix maybe. I had a wee look through Netflix this morning to see what he might have been watching. So I've got a few theories.
On you go.
An episode of Stranger Things, where Humza Yousaf owns up to misleading Parliament because stranger things have happened. There's also a show called Survival of the Thickest, which I think is pretty self-explanatory. And there's some good movies on him relating to the Humza Yousaf administration. Scary Movie, Under Siege is available. But one I know he definitely wouldn't have watched that. Now, I've never seen this film, but it's called The Vow. I'm told it stars Rachel McAdam and Channing Tatum and not Gordon Brown, but I'm pretty sure Michael would have stayed away from that one.
Viewers, Douglas Dickey works for the Scottish Daily Express, just to clarify. Good films, some of them, yeah.
Under Siege is good, a bit of Steven Seagal, can't
Under
beat
Siege,
that.
Yeah.
And I know you'd like The Vow, Paul, so...
That's associated with the Daily Record. Yes, thanks for reminding us of that.
Absolutely.
Moving on then, good week, bad week. Start with you, John.
I think it's been a bad week for Michael Matheson for the reasons we were discussing there. He's a strange minister, Michael, in that he's one of these kind of quite unassuming guys that just seems to go beneath the radar. Everybody sort of assumes that he's working away hard. He doesn't do that much or tries to avoid the media as much as possible. So this, you know, this throws up all sorts of questions about his competence and I think people will be wondering whether we've just paid an £11,000 bill for someone to have been watching Netflix or something like that over his holidays. I think it's been a good week for Monica Lennon with the announcement of this new bill that she's championing ecocide. She's already had a huge success in having her period poverty bill become law. If she was to do so again with this one, then that would be two sort of world first bills would make headlines around the world. So you've got to take your hat off. She's certainly knows how to pick issues that mean something to people and ideas that can actually be turned into effective laws.
Dougie, over to you.
Yeah, it's been a bad week for transparency in government. Another example of the SNP trying to sweep things under the carpet in terms of the COVID WhatsApp messages, when exactly they were requested, exactly how many they are, when they're going to get handed over, who's going to hand them over, you know, everything to do with it. The SNP rebuttal service that they're setting up is certainly going to be busy. And I think it's been a good week for Douglas Ross, who comfortably...
You always say a good week for Douglas Ross.
I think this might be the first time, actually, but...
You're thinking of Ben Borland, then.
I try and mix it up. I try and not be too partisan, but... I think Douglas did easily get the better of Humza Yousaf at FMQs today. He kind of reduced him to a bit of a gibbering wreck, just shouting about Boris Johnson constantly. And I think he brought the side of Humza Yousaf that he's been trying to keep quiet, and that's somebody who's extremely angry and quite frankly out of depth. So I think it was a good performance, a calm performance from Douglas Ross, and I think it was a comprehensive victory for him at FMQs.
Yeah, I think it was a very, very difficult FMQs for Humza Yousaf. I mean, you just cannot possibly square the earlier statement with the one that Sean Robeson gave yesterday. He was always going to get pulverised FMQs and so removed.
It was interesting that the main attack line he fell back on, saying, well, all the WhatsApps that were given by the Tories to the UK inquiry revealed them to be fighting like rats in a sack. But I mean, it really only highlights the issue that, well, what's in your WhatsApps?
Yeah, I know. It's not a good issue for him in any way at all. It's just the sooner he gets past this, the better for him.
He's under siege, just like Steven Seagal.
Under siege, yes, he's under siege. Right, I think that wraps up for another week. Thanks to John and to Douglas. That was terrific, and I hope you can all join us again next week for the latest installment in the WhatsApp scandal.
It's important we look at the facts. Why? Why?
Douglas Ross is sounding pretty scared.
Because I believe in independence.
And he clapped like a seal.